I Hate Podcast. We talk about ghosts of the past and little the spirit of the future. Hey, Jessica.
Hey, Hannah.
How are you?
Chasing the dream.
Chasing the dream. Are you any closer?
I did have a turkey sandwich today.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Did you make it yourself?
I did.
Or did you go to a place?
No.
Made it yourself.
Huh? Mm. Chip? Okay, here's...
Did you put the chip on it?
Here's the situation.
That's what it is.
White bread.
Yes.
Okay. I am an of an age. Wonder Bread. I am who I am.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Wow.
Yep. Okay. Here's the trick to a non-soggy Wonder Bread sandwich, because it's not a high-quality bread.
No, and I think the bread sticking to the roof of my mouth, like glue?
Yeah.
Is an experience I remember.
Okay, but I have solved this.
Okay.
Okay, bread.
Mm-hmm.
Meat. Cheese. Choice of sauce. Chips. Cheese, meat, bread.
What's your sauce choice?
Today was obviously Blue Plate mayonnaise.
Blue Plate?
Don't you dare.
Not Duke's?
Ew.
What?
Are you kidding me? This far south, you don't eat Duke's here?
Yeah, yes, we do.
It's a Blue Plate country.
Okay. I disagree.
Next, you're going to tell me you like Louisiana hot sauce.
I don't like any hot sauce. Joke's on you. I don't like spice.
Anyway, if you put your wet in the middle, it doesn't make the bread soggy and it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth.
I'll tell you what I am, and that is a bread thumb.
I am not shocked to hear this news.
No, you're not. No, you're not. No, you're not. But I like to bake, and so if I can't, well, I can't always, but I prefer to bake a bread.
Okay.
And then if I can't, I go to a bakery.
Well, I got mine at Winn-Dixie. So.
I really, bread is important to me. It's
okay. I just need something to hold my ingredients together.
That is not.
I am an ingredients part of the sandwich person.
The bread is the main part of the sandwich.
Firmly disagree.
Well.
Because if you have good bread and shitty ingredients, then you just have good bread.
Well, what if you have good ingredients and shitty bread?
The bread doesn't matter.
Yes, it does.
If you have a high quality boar's head cheese, the bread is not as important.
I want the bread to be delicious and a high quality cheese.
Okay.
Well, I want everything to be amazing.
Okay. Well, you know, it's expensive to be outside. So I got to cut corners on my bread.
I agree. I mean, I understand, which is why, to be fair, I bake my bread.
Really?
But I like baking a lot. So that's what I
could not be bothered to bake my own bread. Mm-mm. If I had to live.
What if you were like a.
Like any of the American girls, really, I would die because I was just never learned how to bake the bread. Mm-mm.
Well, I mean, you could theoretically be Samantha.
I mean, probably not, because she was still doing okay, so.
Yeah. I guess it's an announcement for our listeners that sometimes we are now recording our podcast visually for our social media channels. Mm-hmm. You will see it soon. But I think we'll have to have a compilation at some point of all the different times I wiggle and shift in my seat.
I don't think we have that kind of time. I don't think your reels can be that long.
That was so rude. A constant rearrangement. I like grab the moment that I know you're going to talk for at least 30 seconds, and I'll just do like a shift. Why, Sammy, you know what? Well, you got those really good tomatoes. Do you ever put a tomato on your sandwich? Because you got those really yummy tomatoes for our Jen and tonics the other week.
Mm-hmm. You know where I got those tomatoes?
The store. Winn-Dixie.
No, I told you I was going to the farmer's market.
Oh, yeah, you go to the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because y'all have one down here now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think y'all have had it for a while. Yeah, I have to say, I had some burrs today. We were at a family function, and she had gotten them, like, from a farm, like a local farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't typically love tomatoes, but, like, it is one of those things where genuinely a tomato at, like, Winn-Dixie or, like, Publix is just not going to, like, I like the ones from, like, the farm, but, like, the flavor, I don't know. It's just not there. Like, it really genuinely tastes better.
Okay, well, this has turned into a Winn-Dixie hater account.
But I like many things about local, like, not local grocery stores.
Name one. And it's the answer is not the parking.
Kroger delivery. I like
it. Okay, but that's not going to the grocery store.
Well, it is a grocery store that delivers. I like the delivery part of it.
And what are you buying with your Kroger delivery?
I mean, we buy our snacks.
Which are what?
I mean, usually, like, I don't actually eat a lot of snacks. I grew up in an ingredient household, but my children like yogurt, granola, little snack bars, fruit, lots of fruit. I can't actually afford to buy children local fruit, my children, because they act like they're soldiers who have been at sea for 10 years without an orange. And they just...
trying not to get scurvy.
They just eat a pound of strawberries in a day. And so... so to be careful. But I genuinely, I really like, I don't usually like a tomato, but I will like in the summer when you've got like fresh tomatoes from the farm, local farms. Those actually really do taste good to me. Put a little salt and pepper on it. Mm.
Okay. Well, the other half lives, you know?
Well, I mean, you did buy a local farmer's tomato for our gin and tonics.
No, I bought local farmer's tomatoes and then also decided to make gin and tonics.
I see the difference. I mean, I want to hear local. Okay, summertime strawberries though, like a local strawberry from a farm is genuinely like sweeter, juicier, so good. I love strawberry season.
Are you getting paid by Big Farm?
Apparently, peaches, amazing. We're close to Clayton though. It's like the Alabama peach capital. Have you been to Clayton for the peaches? Do you like peaches?
I only go to Clayton to go to that one gas station.
Okay, well, I think next time we should also go to a peach farm. Clayton, peaches. Okay. Yeah, Chilton County peaches, 10 out of 10.
All right.
Can we go?
Whatever.
Don't get excited, Jessica.
Can I pay with a debit card?
I think so.
Okay, let's go.
I mean, tell you what, if you're trying, oh my God. You know, my card's like, I don't have like a tap card. I have like an insert card. Mm-hmm. And I was at like a little like Maker's Market crap bazaar where I did tell my kids I wasn't going to buy them anything. And obviously I did. And like everybody kept trying to tap my card. And then one vendor was like, I don't have an insert thing. I only take tap. And I was like, does everybody have tap? Am I behind the tops?
Why didn't you just use Apple Pay?
I don't use Apple Pay. Like, I don't.
Well, now you're behind the times.
Apparently, but can you use Apple? So if I have my card, it's not a tap card. Can I use it for Apple Pay? Mm-hmm. What?
Just like uploading a card to PayPal.
What? Yeah. Okay. Well, I will be using Apple Pay. I just haven't updated my card there. Because I lost my other debit card. Because normally I'll lose my debit card and then I find it, you know, some stashed away place. But I actually did lose my. For real. So I had to get a new one. And I haven't updated my information. I will pay. But also, Square readers from Square are free. Just beep, swipe it. Dude. Anyway, I should. So we didn't buy the crocheted chicken.
She'll just have to find an artisan chicken.
I tell you what, we're on like a roll of talking about our summertime joys. As it turns out, your Wonder Bread sandwich started us off. Mm-hmm. Now we've moved on to fruits and...
One of us is still just getting things from the grocery store, and one of us is not.
Well, you went to the market, you got tomatoes, didn't you? Mm-hmm. You did? What did you use them for besides G&T?
Oh, tomato pie.
Oh, that's a southern view. Mm-hmm. How was that?
Great.
Oh, I've never made one.
I would argue the easiest of pies.
I try to make a pie for Memorial Day this year. It's Christina Tozzi is like a pastry chef or something. Mm-hmm. But she wrote she started something called Milk Bar, I think, and then she wrote like a cookbook with all her favorite recipes. Anyway, the pie that I tried to make is called crack pie, and I fucked it up so bad.
It's called what?
Crack pie.
Why?
Because I don't know. The visuals of it, it does have some cracks in the top, but also I think because it's like a really addictive pie.
Okay.
So that's what she did.
So white woman?
I mean, obviously, yes.
It strikes me as like, you know, those white women on Pinterest that are like better than sex brownies. And it's like, Deborah, I don't think your needs are being met.
Mm-hmm. I was like, honey, you fine? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that your husband is not or partner.
Whoever if somebody served me something called crack pie, I'm out.
Really? What if it was so good?
I will never know.
She's not going to eat it. Okay, well, I
don't fall to peer pressure.
I will change the name when I serve it to you. But you're probably not going to want to eat it anyway because it was the worst thing I've ever made.
Oh, well.
It's not the recipe that was me.
Okay.
Because I've made it successfully before and it was delicious. I don't know what happened. Because I think the inside, they're supposed to caramelize or something. I don't like thicken up. Anyway, I think I think it was too hot. Because everything like boiled and crystallized instead of baking, I think. I'm uncertain. What are we drinking tonight, Jessica?
Oh, I'm having a refill of a zero sugar Mountain Dew Baja Blast.
With the whisper of whiskey?
No.
Did you put more whiskey in there?
I didn't.
Oh, it's just straight up?
Just
zero. You're having a non-alcohol beverage tonight.
I am.
This is like when I was drinking kombucha that time.
Can I tell you the drama about this cup, though?
Yeah. It's just, it actually just was she stole it from a cafeteria, to be honest.
Well, to be honest, I was going to steal it from a restaurant in my hometown while I was home for Frontier Days 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody I was with was too embarrassed to let me do that. So I was like, dear waitress, can I buy your Pepsi cup? And she just handed me an empty takeout container and let me smuggle it out of the building.
Is this person you were with who I suspect you were with?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. That is hilarious. Mm-hmm. Well, so I love that for
this
you.
This cup is actually...
why did you want that so bad?
1 year older than me. And I just... It's a great 10 out of 10 90s Pepsi cup.
I mean, those 90s Pepsi cups are just like...
Smacks.
I mean, they would survive, like, I think, nuclear fallout.
I judged it for a really long time. But I do understand the appeal of drinking a very cold sweet tea out of a mason jar.
Yeah. I understand the appeal. Well, I do the appeal. Well, I don't really drink a sweet tea anymore, though. Although, I have to say, growing up... I almost exclusively drink tea and never water. So how the turns have tabled. What are we talking about tonight, Jessica?
Well.
Oh, I'm drinking a whiskey, everybody. Just
what are you, what kind?
I don't remember. I can't. Well, I mean, it's your whiskey from the square bottle.
Yes, the square bottle is a Mercer & Prince Japanese whiskey.
And at first, when you first gave it to me, I really hated it. Yeah. I was like, you were
reaction.
Excited. You were actually, I felt bad because you were excited to share it with me. And I misread your body language because I thought we were going to agree that maybe it wasn't the best.
No, I actually had to ask someone to cross a state line to get the bottle of it. And someone who exclusively only eats homemade bread and artisan vegetables this isn't good enough for me.
Artisan vegetables, get out of here. No, it wasn't the one's good enough. It was startling, I think, because it has this whiskey has like a really apple-y, like it's really, you can really taste, like, you couldn't really,
I'm the problem.
You can really taste the fruit. It's a very like sweet fruit apple based liquor. But it takes some warming up to get there, but maybe. Okay. Well, it took me a second. Maybe it was just that I was surprised because it is like a very mild, you would have to admit, it's a very like mild tasting, sweet kind of apple-y flavor. But it took me a few drinks. Maybe I was surprised. Maybe I was expecting my expectations of the whiskey. You know what? That's the problem. I put expectations on the whiskey and I should not have done that. You have to let the flavors come to you. And accept it for what it is.
Maybe it's the flavors, the friends we made along the way.
That's what we did. Anyway, that's what I'm drinking tonight.
All right, here's
what
the thing.
I can't wait for our Instagram story to have your Baja Blast can on there.
Let me tell you how deeply ingrained my Baja Blast is in my body. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the maker's name off the top of my head. I will put their Instagram handle in our stories when this releases. She makes hair clips. It started out as different people's professions. So she was doing a lot of like nursing, teachers.
Would it be like a pencil for a teacher or something?
Yeah. Or like someone who was getting like their doctorate was like a diploma.
Okay. So like emblematic of the.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then someone one day was like, I'm not having a Baja Blast right now. And the Baja Blast cup was born. So I have one on the way in the mail. Long story short. But I like that company because they make a big one for people who have long, thick hair and a short one for people like me.
Oh! And then maybe people like me who have almost no hair at all.
Famously have to clip it out of your face.
I had a meltdown salon the other week. I was like, it's too long. Get it off. And I was like, she was like, I could take like an inch off. And then other than that, I'm just shave your head. what are we talking about tonight, Jessica?
Okay, here's the thing. It's summertime.
Summertime.
The children are loose.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Much to my dismay.
Yeah, they are free range.
The family reunions are gathering.
Yep.
People are looking for things to do.
Matching tees.
Which I have to tell you, I think might be an exclusively Southern variety of activity. Matching tees at your family reunion.
Oh, really?
I feel that deeply. I'm willing to be wrong. But
I have not thought about that. I've only really seen other family reunions. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Or like a Disney trip.
Well, yeah, but you got to like look like your party in case you get separated.
Yeah. It's like a Disney trip / Southern family reunion thing. Mm-hmm. If we have any listeners from the North, maybe they can
fill us in.
Yep. Let us know how that goes because I wouldn't know, honestly.
even think I have a big enough family to reunite, to be honest. We could probably fill up, like, the party room at a Chili's.
I mean, we really only gather. We don't really have much immediate family. We don't. That we, like, spend time with. So, but my... No, extended family. My immediate family is about 29 people. And we don't wear matching shirts, no. Because I simply think we would all write.
Well, the thing about family reunions in their matching shirts and others, there's some free time for families and people.
You gotta do things.
Get busy. And where there is summertime, there is hot. And where there is hot, there is a need to combat it, which means air conditioning, which means people are flocking to cultural tourism. You're that gray area of people that go to battlefields in the summer, and then in which case, judging you.
Oh, Jessica, I just tell you this. I have gone to battlefields.
Judging you.
I know. I didn't have a choice. It wasn't so much that we went to the battlefields as they were, like, along the way, and then we, like, got up and stood on a grassy knoll, and we're like, oh, a cannon once stood here. On our way to Williamsburg. So we're talking about cultural institutions today.
Yeah.
Because we are famously in Birmingham and Alabama. One could say one is in the other.
So for Birmingham and England.
We are in Birmingham, Alabama. But we're going to talk about different museums and cultural institutions in the area. Mm-hmm. In Alabama. Well, mostly some in Birmingham, but some in general in Alabama. Because we're both, this one might be surprising, big museum nerds. Mm-hmm. I've worked in several museums, including Livy Museum. I worked at the Birmingham Zoo for a while, quite a few years ago. But I've always worked in programming in museums. But you've worked in, like, actual interpretation and exhibit creation.
I've been in the museum field for 150 years.
Yeah, you've been a very focused individual. So I have bounced around to multiple museums, including the zoo and a science center and several other places. I have a diverse museum experience. And I've lived many lives. Jessica has lived an historic life. Literally. So, what do we want to start with today? What are we talking about first? Let's start with something that, let me give you a hint. Let's start with something that we really love, that we think is doing great. And then let's talk about some stuff that, what you think. And we'll talk maybe some general, I think some of this might come with things museums do really well to help some of our listeners maybe notice, you know, what's to take advantage of cultural institutions and maybe some things to, like, look for as we look with a critical eye. Not everybody's perfect. Right. That's my vibe. Do you meet me?
Yeah.
Let's do it. I think we should talk about the baseball museum. The Negro Southern League Museum. Our local museum about baseball. Mm-hmm. But it's specifically about the Negro Leagues in Alabama. Mm-hmm. But, man, I thought this museum was 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. Because when you walk in, there's, like, on the floor, they made it from bats, right? Wooden bats. Mm-hmm. Like a large outline of America with, like, stars where different Negro League teams were located, like, right off the bat. But it's, like, it's beautiful. And they have, like, I forgot the exact number, but hundreds of signed baseballs from Negro League players. They have, like, a video introduction. Mm-hmm. So right away, you're kind of getting hit with multiple textures and artifacts along with, you know, a video sort of introducing the museum. And it's, like, a bleacher style seating there.
This is just me. Mm-hmm. I do not love an intro video.
Yeah.
I understand the necessity. I have had to make a number of intro videos. And I would be the visitor to skip it. If it's an option, I'm out.
Yeah.
But that one was good.
I mean, of videos, it was a good one. I, too, don't really love one. I understand why you had to do one. Mm-hmm. Like, I get why you would need one. Which is, I mean, for our, just to, this is why I would say you would need one, because, like, there obviously tends to be, like, a lot of writing in a museum. You kind of have to set the larger context of what your visitor is going to be seeing and experiencing, and to contextualize, like, all the individual exhibits they'll see. Yeah. And it's a really quick way to capture attention and to, like, educate kind of quickly. Mm-hmm. Unusually, and, like, I think that one did, like, they, a lot of times they encompass, like, oral histories.
I think
you have anything to add about, like, why you would think a video would be good?
No, I don't. I think it.
Well, why me? Well, say not good, but why you think a museum? Why would a museum use one?
I mean, I think you've hit all the points of why would. I think it depends on like where.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're right at the gate, if you're using an intro video to get people prepped for what you're seeing, mm-hmm. fine. If you have, or I've worked in some spaces where like where you hit a new part of a, like a chronology,
mm-hmm.
there's a little
yeah
something there. If you're just making videos for the sake of making videos though.
Like, yeah.
I've seen a lot of that too.
Because I think a lot of people think that it's going to grab some people's audience, to be an audience's interest right away.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's just maybe not always true.
The thing that I think works for them though, I think it's useful for this museum specifically to use one because the history is so specific.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the first thing you engage with when you get there. Like we yeah. had a whole introduction from their
mm-hmm.
executive yeah. director
mm-hmm.
about like what to experience, what the video is going to be. Like,
yeah.
If I walk into a place and they're like, check out the intro video, I'm immediately going to walk past that yeah, because you could not be bothered really irritated. To orient me as a visitor. Yeah.
But the staff was like very welcoming. And also like there were several other things to see when you came in. Like you immediately, he, you know,
mm-hmm.
the director showed us the floor. They showed us all the baseballs. We could kind of walk around and they had all the names, the baseballs facing out. So you could like read the names. Mm-hmm. They had another like miniature like exhibit right as you come in. Like a, I think it was a wall of bats or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the video. And like you said, this was a very, very specific
yeah.
museum. And it's not large. The museum, like if you're kind of walking through, a museum really only going to take about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. But obviously we took like almost 2 hours. Because yeah. we obviously like looked at everything.
But I think like the problem with museums is I think there's a tendency for small museums and big ones, because I'm willing to dog out the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
They're too long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I am kind of the camp of like your visitors got the attention span of a bull rider. You got about 8 minutes to get in and get out or mm-hmm. they're out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true for most people.
I also like don't want to be blasted with a loud ass intro video.
No. And like really it messes with the visitor experience. And I'll talk about, because I've got another museum in mind. When you go through the museum and you can hear the video still,
mm-hmm.
or you're constantly hearing another video ahead, or even worse when they're interlapping,
yeah,
like the sound does, it really messes with the visitor experience. And this room was sectioned off. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you left and entered like the exhibit space, you couldn't hear the video anymore.
Yeah.
And so that kind of preserved the visitor experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the exhibit hall. I mean, it was packed with like artifacts.
Yeah, it's not a text heavy museum at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's all stuff.
It was just.
And it's like, it could. I always feel like it goes, let me tell you.
Yeah.
One time I was at a conference in a city where Walmart money rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we went to a museum that was very obviously a private collection run by a guy who just wanted to show off his.
Yeah, his stuff.
Tchotchkes. But yeah. The tchotchkes were 100% either stolen or fake Native American artifacts. There's a real repatriation issue there.
Yeah.
And my initial reaction to reading about this, the Negro Leagues Museum, and it being not really a private collection, but it was like a very central group of people finding all the stuff.
Yeah.
Is that sense of ownership over the stuff was going to be a reason why I wasn't going to like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did you experience though?
It always influences the way they interpret the stuff. But yeah. I think it was like these guys specifically were so into preserving the stuff that mm-hmm. was allowed to come out more in the authenticity of the very minimal labels that they had.
Yeah, they didn't. Because, I mean, and it can be, it's really hard, I think, for a museum to get it right with like writing too much, trying to mm-hmm. give too much information. And then you just can't absorb it because mm-hmm. you're just reading so much. There's no way you can train all that. But I thought the labels were pretty well done. It was mm-hmm. like really dense labels. It spoke very specifically.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I mean, I always enjoy like a super artifact heavy place versus like really choosing. But I mean, I personally did really enjoy it. They have so many things to see. I mean, it was a very visual.
From like a development perspective, I mean, Expo Displays always slaps with their exhibit design, and I think mm-hmm. they took really seriously, and it's a point of frustration for me.
Yeah.
Is when the artifact label is nowhere near the artifact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can create it. I think they had a key system yeah. in most places. Yeah, when you have to go hunting, it's not my favorite.
No.
And that, so that would be one of my criticisms. And there's a few of the cases were really wide. And so there were two doors that closed in on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the seam interrupted the label.
Yeah.
And so you kind of had to lean back and forth. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's even nitpicky criticism about the space.
Yeah.
And they had that really terrific interactive
mm-hmm.
with, they had holographic players, a real Negro League player. And
Satchel Paige.
Satchel. Oh, thank you. I should have known that because I know Satchel.
They're on a first name basis.
Nickname basis.
But he pitches to you. You like, yeah, you pick the pitch.
You can pick the pitch and he'll pitch to you and you can like bat.
The downfall of an interactive is that your interactive needs to work and all of your components need to work. I should have been able to throw all four pitches, but I could only throw two.
Yeah. And so that's like a hard, because exhibit maintenance is also
expensive.
Mm-hmm. It's very expensive. And I mean, like I said, it's a small museum. Mm-hmm. And but it would line up. And also the interactive took up the whole room.
What was the point of the room, I think?
Yeah, I think that was the aim of the room. And yeah. So the interactive kind of like it came into play with the exhibit space as well mm-hmm. in a way that I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah. I think we also, well, okay, here's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm nosy.
Yeah, obviously.
So I was like, dear Executive Director Anthony, who created your exhibits, tell me more. What's the tea? And then he immediately wanted to talk about exhibit development.
Yes.
So, and their last case was a case about the three women that played in the Negro Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And I like really appreciated his transparency about like, we have to fix the lighting and we have some other issues in this case. And
yeah.
I think if more museums were just willing to be like, yeah, shit breaks sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
More people would trust them.
We've got to get this done, yeah. Because, I mean, any person can walk in and see, like, this case is not lit mm-hmm. and the others are. And we have to assume, I mean, not always, because I'm at some dumbass audiences. But, you know, assume your visitor is intelligent in some sense, you know. Mm-hmm. And, like, can tell that it's not working or the interactive's not completely working well. But, I mean, yeah.
I'm always like,
I really appreciate that so much.
Very vocal about this, largely to leadership that didn't bother to listen to me, is that
mm-hmm.
people want to understand the behind the scenes of what, like, how did we get here?
Yeah. How was the story written? How did you choose what to say?
Yeah. Like, why don't these lights work? Mm-hmm. Well, because these are these bulbs are $50, $60 a piece mm-hmm. and you came in here for free.
Yeah.
We need the donations. We need the support. If people knew what their monetary support was going to,
mm-hmm.
it would be more inclined to give it.
More motivated. Or say like, yeah, you can only do two pitches on this interactive because it costs this much money to fix the problems.
I remember an extreme back and forth in a previous institution that mm-hmm. I worked at. We were developing a temporary exhibit where it would have made sense to pull some of the things that were already on display
mm-hmm.
in the gallery spaces to put into that exhibit.
Yeah.
We had talked about creating signage of like temporary on display upstairs. Be sure to check it to drive people up.
Yeah. To like engage them in other areas.
Immediate pushback. Immediately. No.
Why?
God forbid. You take out the three things we asked for out of thousands of square feet of exhibit space to put upstairs.
Mm.
No.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think if any museum was going to do that, it would be that one.
Mm-hmm. They seem like, yeah, they just really wanted to do it well.
Yeah.
And you could see the love of the subject matter
mm-hmm.
in the creation of the museum. And they were, it was small. They didn't say it wasn't small. They were very choosy. You know, I love a museum interactive. And, you know, they just didn't have space for a ton. And mm-hmm. so they chose really something very cool and really well done. So what they have was very impactful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hands down, I mean, probably one of my favorite museums in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
In the state. I loved being there.
You know, Expo Displays and I actually have a long-standing relationship that I realized just recently.
Oh, yeah.
That they also redesigned the bank that I used to bank at in Mississippi.
Look at y'all.
Shout out to Trustmark and Fondren.
That's so funny. Well, what do we talk about now? Which one we go to from here? I brought up this one. Where do you want to go, Jessica?
I want to go to...
I know where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Let's go there.
Okay.
I want to go to Kelly Ingram Park.
That's not what I was expecting. I do have a problem. Kelly Ingram Park. Okay, so in downtown Birmingham, the park where the children's marchers marched and like were ambushed by the police is now, it's still public park. It's a sculptural.
Mm-hmm.
This, like, I don't know. What would you call it? Like, it's got a number of sculptures that you walk through.
Yeah.
That tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And they have an audio tour.
Mm-hmm.
That I do have a beef with, yes.
The audio tour, let me tell you something, is trash.
Mm-hmm.
My issue, though, is that there, you could go through the park really in any direction, any of those sculptures, and get the point.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty well-maintained park, except for the glaring problem of the fountain in the middle never having any water in it.
Yeah, and, like, there's a few places that, like, flood. Like, they've got just some issues like that. Like, it floods and the grass doesn't grow.
However.
Go ahead.
That's a thing that happened before the fountain went in.
Yes, yes it is.
Plan accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Park service.
Yeah, or there are things you can do to mitigate those issues.
For example, maybe don't put a fountain where children were waterboarded with fire hoses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Choices.
Choices
are my issue, though. If you're in Kelly Ingram Park and you look in any direction,
mm-hmm.
So if you're looking towards, you can either look at like 16th Street and like 6th Avenue where really popped off for the children's campaign. Mm-hmm. Like one way at the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we will.
You go the other way. There's the Arthur Shores Law Firm building and some other, what else is down there? Metropolitan AME is down there.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep going down the way and kind of hang a right, there are Masonic temples down mm-hmm. there, Carver's down there.
Yeah. So it's
absolutely no interpretation of what you're looking at.
No.
That's why it matters.
Yeah, there's really nothing. You have to have a guide. Mm-hmm. If you don't know anything, a guide has to come with you and explain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's that one image of the police officer shoving the teenager back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's based off a really famous photograph that should be on a sign next to the thing. You know, there's a lot that's not there. And like, again, like the issue with like, you know, the water where kids were waterboarded with fire hoses, but also like the city didn't think about fountains are extremely expensive to keep up. And like, I mean, downtown water is also kind of an issue because the homeless population, like, I mean, just often takes baths and things like that. Like there's been lots of public spaces that have turned off their water because of that. Well, that would be mitigated by having showers available. But, you know, but also just fountains in general, not only are difficult to keep clean because of weather, because of like being available, but also just expensive to run. So like, put something in that doesn't require a constant money coming into it.
Why did we need a fountain there to begin with?
We didn't. And so
there's nowhere like you can go through that, whatever sculpture tickles your fancy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sit down about it.
Mm-mm. Yeah, there's not really any like contemplative spot to be.
Nope.
But objectively, though, I do think the sculptures themselves are really beautiful.
Like, it's the saving grace of Kelly.
Yeah, and they're very moving to come through and watch. Mm-hmm. It's really, and you have to circle through the park, so you kind of encompass the area where they walked. There's the three kneeling ministers. It's really beautiful to me.
Can I tell you my bonus beef?
Mm-hmm.
I think they should have not put.
You don't want the ministers.
Oh, the ministers are fine.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they should have put MLK in the smack center of the park. They should have moved that Fred Shuttlesworth that's outside of BCRI and put it at the park.
Mm-hmm, they should have, yes. I agree. Because he's...
Well, they also famously had beef by the time that MLK showed up to help him with that, so...
Yeah, they the beef. We'll have a discussion about the beef in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Here's my bonus issue.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're standing in front of... If you're standing, like, right before you go through the one with all the dogs.
Yeah.
And you're looking towards BCRI on that corner. BCRI is going to run horizontally to you. If you're looking down the street towards the Gaston, there's that little...
Yeah.
Where the two buildings almost meet.
Yeah.
My beef with that is it was very obviously used to be a playground.
Yeah.
There's a sign that says children's playground.
Yeah. It was up even a few years ago. Yeah. It's torn down now.
But the sign, which is absolutely sun faded and the only signage out there, period... says civil rights playground. And I'm like, we didn't think that through.
Mm-mm, nobody thought that through, Jessica, now.
Where the children famously gathered.
Mm-hmm. To be attacked by adult police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nobody thought that through.
No. I think there's an opportunity there for some seating, though.
Yeah.
I don't know who owns that, but there's some opportunity
there. I wonder. I would assume the city of Birmingham, but I'm not sure.
Not either.
So, I mean, Kelly Ingram is definitely, if you can get a guide to walk through with you.
I think this is maybe... A larger park situation Birmingham mm-hmm. question, but like, why is there nothing about the namesake of Kelly Ingram Park?
Yeah, there's literally, you have to Google it, because mm-hmm. it was like a World War One soldier. Mm-hmm. You know what? No, I think there is a little plaque. As you come in, if
see
you're
the
coming,
problem though, like
if you're, yeah, there's like one spot because there's multiple entrance points to the park. So if you're coming from Gaston and you're walking down Fifth Avenue North and you come in that entrance, mm-hmm. Fifth Avenue and 16th Street, I think there's a small plaque.
But why is it small?
I don't know.
See, I mean, there's just not a lot. No, signage, signage.
But I think signage. This gets to like when you're coming into a museum or interpretive space, whoever creates it, I don't want to say control the narrative, but you have to educate your audience on mm-hmm. what they're experiencing. Yeah. Because if you leave it, if people just walk through, they might know something bad happened. They might mm-hmm. get the general gist of the story. But you want people to walk through, understand the story, but also one function of museums is a call to action. And like an understanding of like, what do we do with this history? Where do we go from here? And that's really important.
If you're only depending on an audio tour, you've just eliminated anybody who has any sort of hearing disability mm-hmm. and they have no idea what's going on.
Mm-mm, they don't know at all.
It's also only offered in English.
It's like, and that's not, you know, Birmingham has a really healthy like population mm-hmm. of an international population. You got to think about these things, but also you've got to think like it's difficult to get people to do another step. So the second you add like an action mm-hmm. to your visitor, you start losing people. And so like if you've got a signage out, people can just read, that's one thing. But then you think if you put a QR code down, if you put a listening tour, you might get 50% of your audience. You've immediately lost half your audience.
Let me tell you what else pisses me off about that audio tour besides the fact it's trash. It automatically signs you up for a newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
For what?
You have to ask permission mm-hmm. to use people's data in that way. Like, yeah. I mean, like, I understand that legally you don't have to, but I will always have beef with people using, especially like museums, nonprofits, anything like that that really wants to use. You have to ask permission. Mm-hmm. You can't just sign people up for stuff.
I will immediately unsubscribe.
Mm-hmm. It makes me mad. But tell me what do you think is trash about the audio tour? Like, give us like, what's a good audio tour? Why is this one not so great?
This one, it's very long. You have to stand there forever and listen and on and on mm-hmm. and on. It doesn't just get to
the point. What would be too long for you? Like 5 minutes, 2 minutes?
I think a cool spot would maybe be like 3 or 4. You mm-hmm. have to be able to get to the point at those places because people are trying to walk. They're on a walking tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, there's no, it's just like you and me talking like this. Like there's no experiential design in it.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm standing at the police dogs, I expect to hear barking.
Your dog barking,
and whistles and mm-hmm. yelling or mm-hmm. water or something.
Yes. And you get to the water hose one, you're going to want to hear a sound of a water. There's an immersion mm-hmm. that needs to happen when you're telling
the
story.
What this is just a guy mm-hmm. rattling off a script. And it's very obvious that it was an afterthought.
Yeah.
And even those audio tour signs are not great.
No, they're really not. Like, some of them.
It's not even obvious that there's an audio tour available.
No, you have to kind of hunt for it. It's very small. It's a whole thing. But, like, and for writing scripts for those kind of things, you've got to go through quite a few round of edits because you've got to say a lot in very little amount of time. Mm-hmm. So you've got to start with, like, you know, 1 or 2 full pages and then go down from there. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot of work. And you can't just pop in and do it like it's no big deal. Mm-mm. The whole thing. But one of my other favorite museums in Birmingham is around the corner from there. It's H.E. Gaston.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Gaston Motel.
Yeah, it's a really good interpretation.
It is. So the Gaston Motel is a Green Book site in Birmingham. And so it was a Black-owned motel, but no Black visitors. But it's also a place where some of the civil rights leaders in Birmingham would gather and like plan the civil rights movement and strategize together. Mm-hmm. It was bombed twice? Once.
Mm-hmm. I think it was twice.
I feel like it was twice. And then, and I think they call it the war room where MLK, Shuttlesworth, and Abernathy would, like, plant together mm-hmm. before the beef. And then maybe after.
I mean, Gaston kind of had a little bit of beef anyway.
Yeah.
Because he was very vocal about, don't bring that shit here.
Yep.
But it's bad enough.
They did.
So. But, like, the Gaston does address that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not extensively, but it
kind of touches on it. And like the museum space, you come in, you kind of turn to the left, and they have a museum space. It's a really lovely reception area, and it's still undergoing some like renovations. I mean, it was like really looking rough a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. but you walk in, it does feel like you're walking back into a 50s era motel. Mm-hmm. It's very beautiful. It's got the wood. It's got some of that like green that you would have seen back then. I think the museum space is really lovely. It's one of those where there really aren't a lot of artifacts. Mm-hmm. It is one that I really enjoy it. They got several seating spaces because there's a lot to read. They've got a lot of like photograph reproductions, mm-hmm. like printed, and some of their exhibits. But I think versus the baseball museum, the Negro League Museum, this one really shows like how much what you can do if you don't have access to a lot of artifacts. There's not a lot of visuals there. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that one as well.
Yeah.
And they're open Wednesday through...
I think it's Thursday through Sunday now.
Thursday through Sunday. Because it was Wednesday through Saturday, and now it's Thursday through Sunday, I think
so.
So, but it's another, like, it's really beautiful. And where the exhibits, the museum's part is run by the National Park Service mm-hmm. as well. But it's one of my favorites in Birmingham to go to. And their one, too, they're really good about, they host a lot of community events. Mm-hmm. And that's something I really enjoy, the community aspect of that museum and that access to like education and museum space and like telling this story and I don't know, drawing lines from, because I've taken like the girls there a couple of times. They're really great about their family events. I mean, it's run by like rangers.
Well, it's a Park Service site.
So. Yeah, it's a Park Service site. So it's run by rangers who are always just like really friendly and always ready to share and always ready to interpret. Mm-hmm. I've only had like super positive experience there. It's one mm-hmm. of my favorite places. I just say, I've waxed eloquent about the gas in Odona. but I think we have two places. I think you and I each have a place maybe that we think could be doing a better job.
Uh-huh.
You want to start with yours?
I would love to. Let's go to Montgomery because I'm coming for EJI.
Let's head to EJI. Which I feel like is going to be a really hot take because EJI has a huge tourist attraction.
I don't care.
I mean, you do. That's what I'm saying. Like, let's talk about it because everybody is just full of praise for EJI. So let's talk about what's going on.
Okay. Why is it like that?
Why is it like that, y'all?
Here's my thing. Okay. It is a phenomenon that I have only known, again, working in mm-hmm. Southern Black interpretive spaces.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's different in other places. I don't know. I personally, because I, white woman sitting mm-hmm. on a pedestal for just a second, I don't understand the appeal of bringing an entire family reunion to watch historical trauma.
Mm-hmm.
It's your choice to do what you want with your free time. Now, my issue with EJI, again, you're being blasted from every direction with things to read.
Mm-hmm.
It's so crowded in there.
Yeah.
All the time. Because they're just running people through there.
Yeah.
In a herds of people kind of way.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to make a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You're making money off of people's lived experience. I got beef with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sit down.
No. There's really no place to pause and rest.
No. And to read.
It's massive. It's huge. So much to read.
And there's no... I don't know that everything has to have a redemption story.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no ability to, like, just have a moment to see, like, something of hope
mm-hmm.
or justice mm-hmm. or... You really don't even see a lot of, like, Bryan Stevenson's successes.
Yeah.
In that space where there could have been. And maybe that's by design and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to get on a shuttle to go to the memorial, which I appreciate a shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
It's very timely. They know exactly what they're doing. They keep a very firm schedule.
Yeah, it's just to run pretty well.
But again, you are putting people out in the elements.
Yeah.
It's 250 degrees outside.
Yeah.
And again, it's all open air.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're asking people to suffer in two ways.
Yeah.
Looking for the names of their probably ancestors mm-hmm. on these lynching monoliths.
Yeah.
And then they went bigger and opened a sculpture park.
Do they shuttle to the sculpture park?
No.
Okay.
So, but it's very close to EJ.
Yeah, it's like a separate thing slightly.
Yeah. Moved outbuildings from sites of enslavement
mm-hmm.
to the riverfront.
Yeah, that's the beef that I have because that riverfront floods all the goddamn time. So I'm worried about the preservation of those buildings.
The sculptures.
You don't like the sculptures?
Hannah.
Okay. Well, yeah, go ahead.
They did MLK so dirty. I'm not an MLK fan.
Yeah,
that
did him wrong.
Looks like
did him wrong.
A statue of James Meredith.
Yeah. They did him wrong. I don't like it. Okay. I don't typically enjoy a sculpture that's meant to be like a real life human that everyone knows. Yes. Because
you have to get it right.
You have to get it right. And it's almost impossible to get it right. Mm-hmm. Like I love a sculpture, and something I really enjoy about like for Kelly Ingram sculptures, because they're really not meant to be specific people. You know, you want that sculpture to represent the three. But you really want that sculpture to represent mm-hmm. a larger aspect. But even the three ministers, because most people, they're not recognizable figures, you know, except probably to like someone like you, like an historian who like knows those individuals.
Nobody would know who A.D. King is.
Nobody does. And so even those individuals, because they're not super famous, the three kneeling ministers at Kelly Ingram Park, they also sort of represent the wider population of Black ministers in Birmingham at the time who were involved in the civil rights
movement. My issue with sculptures in general. But,
like, those sculptures are, like, that looks, I mean, they did MLK dirty. I'm just going to say it. They did.
Okay. Here's my...
Did you go to the sculpture part?
Why are there so many statues? I have issues with statues generally.
Yeah, you do.
I am not a fan. They're expensive. They're heavy. The Confederate monument's got to come down. And when they come down, people are like, make it the museum's problem. And somebody has to deal with that.
Yeah.
That is a side quest of this beef. In the same way that I don't know that anybody's going to forget Rosa Parks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sculpture that they have out of her on the bus seat that it just floats.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm. I love that one.
Don't go that far down the road. There is a sculpture of Rosa Parks in Montgomery that looks like a very fancy white woman.
Mm, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Take it down.
No, it's not good. Yeah.
But my issue with sculptures at large, okay, you know, you remember the last MLK sculpture?
The arms?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We didn't need that.
We didn't. No.
I think we're just too sculpture heavy as a U.S. society.
You say the sculpture? I actually do. I actually really enjoy a sculpture, and I really like a sculpture park. But you and I differ in that way.
That's get sculptures if it's. I think we have enough historical figures. We're good.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need any more. If it's like just a sculpture,
mm-hmm.
fine,
enjoyable. Yeah,
because there's other sculptures in that park that are really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I mean, obviously, I haven't been to that park yet because I've been in Montgomery since it opened. But, you know, looking through the photographs and the sculptural park looks really lovely.
EJI has put people in an open air space mm-hmm. with little reprieve
mm-hmm.
and barely anywhere to sit down.
Because it's like, you could go to Kelly Ingram and sort of, you know, like, you're just going. You're not like buying admission somewhere. You've got trying to get all the things in. Mm-hmm. Even though, I mean, I think EJI is not expensive. $5 or something. Like,
it's real cheap.
It's really nothing. It's just kind of buying in. But if people come down, because, I mean, it is a massive tourist attraction. Mm-hmm. People travel to Montgomery.
People flock there. I don't get it, but they do it.
They do. And so, but that would be my main beef with EJI would be the sheer mass of, it's a shotgun blast of history.
It's trauma porn.
Yeah, the massive amount of reading to do. I do feel like, I do feel like they edge too far into the, like, and I mean, there might be people who disagree. I mean, I'm a white woman talking about this, so mm-hmm. I'd love to hear some pushback, honestly. But
I want all the smoke. Don't get me wrong, but at some point you got to stop force feeding people trauma porn to get mm-hmm. your point across.
And I think some healing aspect, but that makes me think too. When you got museums who have a really difficult history, what does caring for your audience look like too? Especially an audience, you know, an audience who may be looking for their answers or his name on those monoliths.
Yeah.
Well, how now, are you caring for your visitor in that time?
For better or worse, design-wise,
mm-hmm.
there is a project that PBS did called Unresolved.
Yes.
Which, no offense to PBS, but it's a bitch to put up. It's so mm-hmm. heavy. It's all steel.
Yeah.
And acrylic. But they take the idea of a lynching monolith. I can't remember how many panels it is. Top, maybe 12 altogether
mm-hmm.
of people who are eligible for have their cases reopened mm-hmm. through the Emmett Till Act.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go in and learn about those people.
Yeah.
And their whole history. It's not just like what happened to them. It's like who they are as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
You are now shuttling people from one hot space to another to, number one, look up What if you can't do that?
Mm-hmm.
To find anybody they recognize.
Yeah.
Hoping for answers. And then what are they supposed to do with that? Yeah. They already know your, if you already know your ancestor has been lynched, all that's going to do is underscore what you already know.
Yeah.
So what are you, there's no action step afterwards.
Yeah. And like I said a minute ago, I think a really important aspect, especially like museums, like a civil rights museum or a museum with like a social bent, that aspect of like the call to action is important. And especially too, adding to that, if you're a museum that has really heavy and painful and for some audiences, traumatic things to say and learn, how do you care for your audience afterwards?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, you know, if your ancestors are the monolith, you need some care afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a white individual coming in and your ancestor was a lyncher, you've got to have some way to reckon with your history and move on in a positive way.
Jars of dirt and are just not enough.
No, and not a positive way of like trying to make yourself a better, positive way of like, I have to reconcile with my history and I have to make it right.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I think more could be done.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. But I do want to see, I do, this is my positive note, because I love, you know, things I like and dislike about museums. I do want to see the sculpture park. It not, I mean, not the MLK one, but.
Well, there's no avoiding it.
I do, oh my God. I do, I really enjoy, I do enjoy a sculpture park. And I think that'd be meaningful for me more than like going into EJI. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm positive it would be, because I've been to EJI and didn't love it.
It just, there's very obvious to me that nobody with a museum background is involved in the design of that space.
Yeah. A bunch of lawyers with that. So you can tell. Mm-hmm. But because again, we're looking at this from like a museum creation experience and programming aspect. Yeah.
There's not even like an artifact to look at.
No.
It's all walls.
Mm-hmm. Walls and with text. Pictures, so much text.
And no way, if you're not an English speaker, to engage with that text.
Mm-hmm. And you, I mean, there's so much too. You've got to be like a fluent English speaker to really get it at
and
all.
And they do very little to help anybody who does not have an extensive knowledge of enslavement to Jim Crow, to the prison industrial complex pipeline to explain that to them. You have to come in there with a knowledge base.
Yeah, you do. And it's something, and this is why we were saying like the video at the baseball museum kind of gets like a thumbs up from us because they immediately contextualize.
Yeah.
What's going on? Because not many people know about the Negro Leagues at all. So you've got to contextualize that. No, but if you don't know about that pipeline, which is something people should learn about and understand, you've got to have that context. And they don't empower their audience to succeed in their learning experience.
That very first video that they show at EJI, even still, is like, to me, it's just like, look how much money we can throw at a video. Look how pretty it is.
Yeah.
You're not gaining anything extra from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, that's the experience of like doing a really nice looking video just to do
just
one.
For the sake versus, of doing one.
Versus really being thoughtful about your content.
Yeah. Just because Oprah's in it does not make it valuable.
No, it does not. Well, Jessica, I have something along those same lines.
Okay.
I'm going to get some heat from this, but it's the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute.
No, we've come back down 65.
We're coming back down 65, back at the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute.
All right. Crack into it.
First of all. And I'm just going to talk about a couple of things before I'm really kind of, because my experience, my expertise in like a museum space is like really like working on programming, as you know. First of all, why have their exhibits not been updated since the museum opened?
I don't think it's for a lack of trying from some of the staff, but the staff is long gone.
Why are there so many holes in the walls?
Why are there so many holes in the walls?
I don't know. Why are there so many exhibits missing? Why are there so many videos when you walk through one section? You can hear the video and audio from the previous section while you're listening to the audio and video from the current section.
There are very easy and moderately inexpensive ways to combat that.
And there's audio everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, first of all, a fucking sensory nightmare for anyone who struggles with focus or an overload. But also, like, you can't understand one thing because you're listening to something that happened previously. And there'll be, like, multiple audio panels in a row. There's videos that play constantly. And so you can't turn them off and on. They're just above you playing on around. You can hear that one while you're going to the next one. I appreciate their timelines.
Yeah, the timelines are good.
But again, there's so much text.
And it's an early 2000s museum.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a ton. But why are there I wonder if they're programming the way that it is, Jessica.
I mean,
the same exact thing every single year.
Oh, interesting. I was going to say half-assed at best.
half-assed at best, and the same exact thing every year, and not approved upon from
it's
year
a,
to year.
A classic case of it worked 1 year, so we'll just do it again.
Mm-hmm. And it feels like...
That is not a BCRI-specific problem.
No, it's not. It's a museum problem. Mm-hmm. So, like, and this is a wider problem. And especially of, like, if you've got a museum that's very notable for doing one thing, mm-hmm. There is a case for that museum to sort of just coast on that legacy. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily try to build
it. I think there's always space for, like... I think there should always be like a signature program mm-hmm. and do it really, really well every
yes.
year.
Yes. Do a 10 out of 10 program mm-hmm. and that be your main thing.
Yep.
And then you have like some other,
yeah,
other programming along the way. Mm-hmm. And they do a ton. And I think maybe that's part of the reason for things not being done like 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. But also they do the same dang thing every year.
Well,
and
they're
every
also
year
like
they make the exact same mistakes.
Pretty dependent on existing relationships
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't always, at least from a visitor's perspective, seem to be reciprocal.
Yeah.
Like I'm not seeing a lot in the city of people being like, BCRI really helped us do X, Y, Z.
No, I never see that at all. There's it's a very insular mm-hmm. museum that does not step much beyond itself. And I think it kind of relies on those existing relationships to build new ones. But also, it's one of those places, it's, you know, it's the central place for, like, Civil Rights Museum.
Here's the thing.
In Birmingham. So people just, when they write that check, it's an easy to write to there mm-hmm. versus, like, other museum spaces that are also doing really good work that, I don't know, it might be a little bit harder to find or write a check to or may not be, get the biggest headlines, you know what I mean?
Having worked in a place like that,
mm-hmm.
it's a top-down leadership problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
You can also tell by the flow of if you never see the same face twice at the ticket desk,
mm-hmm.
it's a crisis in the building.
Yep, that's a real problem. And I have worked in a museum where mm-hmm. you saw a new face every other week.
Yep.
And that's it. Top-down is a top-down problem. But I have a lot of frustrations with BCR because of what it could be mm-hmm. and what it is not.
They won't allow it.
Mm-mm. I mean, cause it's just because it's really frustrating to watch.
Just because you're bringing a shit load of money mm-hmm. does not mean you're doing it well.
No. And they're bringing a lot of money and doing it really poorly, I think. I think their programming
like
could be
at the bare minimum, awful. Update an exhibit once in a while.
Every once in a while. You know, not all the exhibits at once. It's fine. Because, I mean, exhibits are super expensive. That's mm-hmm. why a lot of care and thought goes into them. Because
it's obvious to me that when they were creating that museum, they did have a lot of care and thought into it.
They had a lot. You
there
can
was
tell.
Very obviously not a contingency plan.
Mm-mm. No. And there was no, there's not a plan, there's not an upkeep, mm-mm. a maintenance plan or budget in place mm-mm. at all. Because, I mean, really, there's so many holes in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I have had, I think, a negative, because it's been it's somewhere I'm there quite a few times. It is the place in Birmingham to go to get a cumulative knowledge of civil rights history in Birmingham and the state
mm-hmm.
and really the nation. So, I've taken my kids there. I've had it as a visitor because I've gone in there in a work role mm-hmm. and I've gone there in a visitor role. I've had a negative experience every time, every single time. The volunteers, super aggressive. I was walking through because obviously I have a lot of knowledge of civil rights students. So I was interpreting for the group I was with, just kind of going through, giving like a tour, people mm-hmm. listening. I was followed around.
Like you're going to steal something.
Yeah. Like I was going to steal something. I'm going to touch something. One was really, she was like, how do you know all this? Like just, it was, which is fine, but it was also a really rude way to ask. I've had a security guard yell at students who were mm-hmm. real. Cause I'm a museum nerd. If you come in, you put your like little bunny fingers up behind a sculpture, your little school group, I'm gonna tell them to stop. I don't care if I work there or not. So, I mean, there are some situations where I think audiences and visitors do have to be educated on how you treat this place in a museum respectfully.
Mm-hmm.
But this was not that.
Well, there, you can also like, you can't expect them to, okay, I'm about to get on a soapbox.
Let's go.
Historically, museums have not been designed for people who are not wealthy and white.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there is not a knowledge base passed down to people who are coming a lot for the as sort of like a first generation space.
Exactly.
However, I do maintain that if you can parent your children in private, they should be able to function in a public space.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to have classroom management when you bring a school group to an exhibit space. Mm-hmm. And you should be able to empower the person giving a tour to keep your visitors in check.
Yeah. All those things can be true at the same time.
Yes. However, if I'm coming into a space as a youth and I don't see anybody like me,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking at places that are full of broken interactives and holes mm-hmm. in the walls, why am I treating that as a space of reverence when the people that own it are not doing the same?
I think that's true. I think that's good, especially if you're a student who the people in those photos look like you
mm-hmm.
and is being treated, the museum is being treated as careless as it is. That's a problem.
I have also seen enough times in museums I have visited and worked at where the staff treats its Black visitors, either they put them on a weird, like,
mm-hmm.
tokenism pedestal,
mm-hmm.
or they treat them like dog shit. Yep. They don't come back.
Yep. And then, like you said, that knowledge base of, like, how to care for these spaces mm-hmm. is not going to be held and learned.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm someone, I mean, obviously, I think all listeners probably know by now, I'm a person who really loves outdoor spaces. So then a lot of like living museum spots, and I've worked like in some of these places.
She goes to all the battlefields.
And all the, not, well, just that one on the way to Williamsburg. But, but I regularly see like Black families treated very differently mm-hmm. in spaces where, you know, the outdoor, and I mean, I follow a lot of like so people on Instagram and those kind of things who are really saying like Black outdoor spaces belong to Black people too. But I regularly see Black people treated with suspicion and are called out too, and their bags are checked and they're checked for like beer stuff when the white people next to them
passing right through.
Yeah, we're not. We're just walking right on by. And that's really frustrating because these spaces should belong to everybody.
I also
and
we see should it
be treating people right
pretty regularly. No one in particular, no site in particular, but it's obvious to me. There is also this air of like, oh, you didn't already know this.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming to a museum to learn.
Yeah, you're coming to learn, and it's okay not to know things. But also, the only reason the context one that wouldn't be okay is if you were determined not to learn. But people are coming into the space because they want to know to something. Learn. And I mean, but also, I mean, I have, no matter who I've been with, and I've brought in very diverse audiences, every time I've gone in, someone has been yelled at by a security guard for something very innocuous,
mm-hmm.
like standing too close to an exhibit or walking next to one of their like statues that are in the fucking middle of the room.
Mm-hmm.
So
don't put them there.
Don't put them there. But also their program. So, for example, I went for, they always do free admission on MLK Day,
mm-hmm.
Which is obviously a really popular time to go because it's not too expensive. But if, you know, if you're bringing a family, you're putting a chunk of change down. A lot of people, like I know, I'm always making sure I get my kids somewhere civil rights oriented. And we chose BCRI this year. And we chose, it was time to enter, you chose a time slot. And it was like, this might not be very cold to you, Jessica, but it was to me. It was like 22 fucking degrees outside. It was so cold. I was freezing. And my kids were freezing. We went up to walk in and they had an event happening inside at our time slot. And which is, I mean, fine. But don't
open the time slot.
Don't open that time slot. And of course it ran over. And we were just outside shivering. And then they opened up the hallway next, like the gift shop, to let us in. But then that got too crowded. And then we had an accessibility issue because not everybody can stand.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people who use, like, you know, mobility aids,
mm-hmm.
struggling to, like, stand in there. It was, I mean, it was like a situation. Mm-hmm. I was like, the girls really wanted to go. I think I would have left. The girls really wanted to go. But, like, don't open that time slot. Keep them on top.
Mm-hmm.
Because some big corporation presenting you a check and some the choir performing is not a surprise. Mm-hmm. That did not pop up just then. So, I have a lot of beef. My things would do well. That's my thing.
I would like to wrap us on a fun.
Okay, let's do it.
Because, you know, I don't often bring the positivity. At the end of the episodes.
This is like me. Like, what about the sculpture part?
As a sculpture park, I really do feel this way. Fun. Broadly, it's a beautiful sculpture park.
I think so.
I think we could have thought it through.
But that's, I think, you know, we bash for, I don't really have anything good to leave with on BCR.
I do.
I'm really mad at them.
Okay.
You go ahead.
In the same way that I was like, I don't think I'm going to like the Nico Southern League Museum because it's kind of a private collection situation.
Yeah.
Sometimes they just slap.
Sometimes they just fucking slap.
And since I'm up the street in Montgomery anyway. The Fitz.
The what?
The Fitzgerald House.
Oh, I've not been in there. How was that?
I really enjoyed it.
Oh.
I feel like a historic house tour can be, it's either good or it's trash. There's no in between.
Yep.
There's never a mid.
Yeah.
More importantly, though, I mean, it isn't a hoity-toity white people part of Montgomery. Yeah. It's very obvious.
I mean, yeah.
But they are aware of that. And I really appreciated, at least the tour that I had, they discussed, not like at great considerable length, but of like, this was an affluent neighborhood and this is why.
Yeah.
And this is how, this is, you know, they hired XYZ architect for da-da-da-da-da reason. Like, mm-hmm. they're pretty forward about it.
Yeah.
Most importantly, though, is their gift shop.
Mm. You love gift shop.
I do. But this one I thought was really cool because people are always like, you hate it or you love it. People want to touch it. But you can buy little pieces of the wallpaper.
Oh, so people can touch it.
And take it home. it's pretty reasonable. I think it's like $10 for a piece of the actual wallpaper off the walls. At some point, they found a surplus of wallpaper and started selling it off.
I mean, honestly, brilliant.
So as far as like a literary house museum, and having worked in one, let me tell you, mm-hmm. you can always tell, as someone who had to give the tour a lot, when you're just running through the facts.
Yeah.
And doing your best.
Yeah.
But they do like a really good job of like, if people want to talk about stuff in the rooms, they would do it. If you just kind of want to explore a little bit, you could do it. If you just wanted to like check out outside, they would like go outside. It was like a very, as far as house museums go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I need to go back.
Yeah.
I'm not that dedicated of a Fitzgerald fan.
No. But for that time.
But if you're.
And house museums are their heart. Like, I mean, yeah.
It's hard to run one. It's hard to fundraise for one. It's hard mm-hmm. to do exhibits in them. It's a tough mm-hmm. gig. Programs usually pretty good in a historic house museum.
Yeah.
But if, you know, I think Montgomery gets this. You're either dealing with the Confederacy, you're dealing with enslavement, you're going to EJI. But if you're looking for like other things happened in Montgomery, mm-hmm. not the. Lower the importance of the legacy of enslavement and the issues of Jim Crow that are very still prevalent there.
Mm-hmm.
But a little escapism is okay too.
Yeah. Yeah. We can.
Sometimes we I can just want to know the day-to-day life problems of rich authors and their wives.
Yeah. We can go and just learn something for like fun and to just enjoy something.
It's a really, really beautiful cool. property.
Yeah. I love that. You know, a museum, I'm going to end on a happy note too. It's not quite the same, but obviously I'm going to do like a science museum. The Fern Bank in Atlanta is like a terrific like museum of natural history. Mm-hmm. It's like, I love it. They got this like, it's three floors. They've got some terrific interactives. They have like a kids area where kids can like adventure and climb, but they do a good job of like interacting with, you know, knowledge about those things. Yeah. They do like a snake interactive exhibit, which I fucking love a snake. But they've got like, I don't know, it's just a really cool museum. And like sometimes you just go and you want to just learn something kind of interesting.
Sometimes I just want my museums to be an escapism. And that's
you want to walk in and you learn really cool stuff. And obviously there's like call to actions with the natural world and everything. But it's also just, it's really beautiful. And there's an outside like treehouse area mm-hmm. that's huge. And you have a small little hiking path you can go on. It's just, it's really... really like a beautiful museum and a beautiful mm-hmm. spot to go. So it's been one of my, I think we've been twice now. I went when the girls were like really young. So they just didn't, I think I might've been pregnant with one of them actually. So we went back more recently when the girls were older and like could remember and actually interact with some of the things. We had a blast. But I love an historical museum obviously, but I love like science museum. I love zoos.
Which museum when we were in Kentucky, the first museum we went to with all the miniatures? What was that one? So the Fraser? It wasn't the Fraser.
No, it wasn't the Fraser. That was, what was that? It's going to come to us. That one was fun.
I feel like we went on a journey at that one because that the miniatures were very obviously what they used to do.
Yes. Because the miniatures part was so massive. There were tons.
Miniatures.
But they kind of expanded in a really good way. And you could tell somebody came, and we actually asked. They had some, and of course, now that I've always worked with like kids, like I've done a lot of kid programming. I started out doing K-5 through sixth grade programming, and I've done high school programming more recently. But so I'm always looking out for like what is here for children, because museums, especially historic museums, tend to be very adult center spaces.
So it's because there's people like me that work work, and then I'm like, the kids are cool, but that's somebody else's problem.
See, they're my problem, which is what I do. But you could tell somebody came in and was like, what about the kids? Because yeah. they actually had some really cool interactives that you could tell them put in that were not a part of the original permanent exhibit they had done. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of fun. And we'd ask, and she was like, oh, we hired somebody that had young children that was like the only person with young children on staff who was like, where's your stuff for the kids? Mm-hmm. And she put them in there. Anyway, go ahead. The miniatures.
I thought we were in for it.
Yeah.
With the miniatures.
I thought it was going to be the whole freaking thing.
And then it went, there's like a samurai suit. I'm like, how did we come to arrive
yeah, here? Yeah, and there were like several other like weaponry from like what a bar.
How'd you get that?
And then we did like, it was like a whiskey section.
Yeah, but then.
And then obviously it was Kentucky.
Am I about to conflate two places?
I don't know. Go ahead.
They did the newest one. I think it was the same one. The newest one they did with all the Christmas whiskeys.
Oh, yep. They did that too. That was so fun.
It was like a full, like, this is clearly our old shit. Mm-hmm. But look at all this fun new shit we're doing.
Yep. That was a cool exhibit. And we got to see that exhibit before it was completely done.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. But they had like, the Christmas whiskey bottles. They had like party dresses. Mm-hmm. It'll come to us and we'll put it on our socials. But it was one of those really large museums that you could tell was going through some changes.
Yeah.
And it seemed, at least from the outside, like looking at it from, like, as you curate some of these exhibits and the programming, the staff seemed very open.
They were letting people in.
Yeah, they were moving into, like, what the museum was coming up to next.
Yeah.
Not in a way that's like, get rid of all these miniatures, throw them out. But in a way that's like, we're evolving in a really just natural way.
Yeah.
That I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. But, I just, Jessica, I fucking love museums.
Yeah. Deeply to my core, I do. That's why I do what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. I will help any museum that wants me to help them. I'm more than willing to guide you through the process, whatever. Mm-hmm. I also am I'm a very specific kind of visitor. I'm usually not that invested in your content. I want to know what your mounts are like. How are you making stuff?
Yeah,
you what do. What does it look like?
You come really analyze. See, I'm a very enthusiastic visitor. Like, I'm coming in assuming that I'm going to have a really good time. And then you've got to kind of convince me that you suck.
I have to be convinced that you're worth my money.
But you, when you convince me that you suck, I hate you forever.
As we have seen.
As we have seen just now. But I'm usually also looking at their programming. I'm always looking at their public programming. What are they offering? A lot of times I'll look at what they're offering currently and I might go try to creep and see what they've done in the past 2 years. I'm just always really curious about what they're, that's what I've done. And so I'm always curious about what are ways that you're using your museum space to, like, further education with your audience.
Yeah.
I'm always, like, that's what I'm looking at more so. But, yeah, it's kind of fun when we go through museums together because you're looking at all the technical stuff, and I'm like, I don't know.
I sound like the teacher from Charlie Brown.
And I'm just, like, I'm just so here for it all. I'm just ready. But I have to be convinced that you suck. And if you do suck, I'll never forgive you.
Friends off.
Mm-hmm. Dead to me. D-E-D. Dead. I know how to spell dead. It's just as a joke. You looked at me like you were not sure.
No. Okay. I was just thinking, like, if you were... Okay, here's my closing question for you.
Okay.
Which museum that isn't BCRI are you D-E-E-deading? Or... which museum would you like to bring back to life?
I don't know of a museum that's, like, closed.
I just mean in general. Not necessarily closed, but, like, maybe it needs some... breathe a little life into it.
McWane Science Center, DED dead.
Okay.
Got some top-down leadership issues. Mm-hmm. And some,
they always do.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
They are the status quo, not the exception.
Yeah. And so that's just where they're at. So having had some insider knowledge there, I would just simply...
we're out.
Yeah, I would simply choose never to go back. It's hard to say because, like, there's so many. I would really love to see the Birmingham Zoo keep... because I consider, like, a living... like, some of the space, like, a living museum. I would love to see... them get, because having also worked there and like we had a membership for a while, we were there a lot when the girls, especially when the kids were really young, because like what young families do. They're just, the staff is just cares so much.
Yeah.
About, and every time I was there, you know, they were really working on, because for a while there, they were really not updating signage and like interactives and that kind of thing. And they were really working on updating consistently. And I always love to see a zoo that tries to make healthy decisions for their animals, even though this, even those animals are like really big traction. So for example, like the sea lions are recently like transferred somewhere else. And I think there, I mean, a lot of the animals are involved in like species survival program because they're trying to rebuild wild population, which there are several animals there that have, and they'll, and like some, they'll have like exhibits too about like some of the success stories, like how these herds have grown in the wild. But like, you know, they were transferred somewhere else, and they, because their home was not, it was not big enough, or you know, they needed to go somewhere else, and then they needed to do some work.
I'm not laughing at the zoo, at the permanent zoo. There's a zoo in Mississippi whose claim to fame is ants. I think about that often.
That's embarrassing for them. But, you know, it's the start of, for a lot of zookeepers, it's the start of zoo. You know, it's on its way up. But, yeah. I would like to see, like, more put. They've been very successful. I mean, their fundraiser, their development team's pretty strong. From the outside, anyway, because their fundraising's been pretty successful. But I think I'd like to see them zipping on up in the world. But also, I mean, me and you know some museums to be in Birmingham.
Yeah.
That are hopefully we'll see more and more successes in the coming years. And maybe we'll have a, hoping for a year from now, we can have a conversation about some new exhibit spaces open in Birmingham.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for you, it's like Jessica and I both work in some museum and preservation spaces. So
sometimes you work in them and sometimes you survive them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Sometimes. But if y'all, I mean, listen, if you want to know some places to go and try, hit us up.
Actually, you know, also put us on. Put us on to some new places. What are we missing out on?
Yeah. We want to go. We would like to stay in the Southeast because we make regular people money. So don't send us to Copenhagen, for example.
Okay.
I don't know why. That just came to my mind.
Wow.
We don't want to go to Denmark to museums.
All right. All right. What if we do, though?
I mean, we do. But I mean, I mean.
Okay. We can't. I don't have a passport.
I mean, well, no. It feels like an expensive trip. But put us on to some museums to go see.
Yeah.
Unless if you want to know some little tiny local out of the way sites in the Southeast, let us know.
Yeah.
We'll get some suggestions for you.
All right. Haintlets, Hauntlets, support your local tourism in a way that's meaningful to you. We will see you next week with all of our musings on some very